5 years ago when a millennial texter hit me and I had to undergo more spinal surgery. And I was in a neck brace and a friend said, we need to get you off the pills, because I started taking pills in 1990 of July, almost 25 years of opiate use. Not believing there was an alternative and not having one doctor my entire life saying, Michael, there's another way.
This is the Cannabis Enigma, cutting through the smoke to have informed, serious conversations for regular people.
Hi, I'm Alana Goldberg.
And I'm Michael Schaefer Omerman. Welcome to the Cannabis Enigma. What's on today's episode, Alana?
Well, you remember I went to Lisbon in November?
Yeah, of course. I was stuck in the office, wishing I was there.
Yep, that's the one. So I was at a medical cannabis conference where I met a ton of fascinating people involved in advancing and researching medical cannabis. This time I spoke to Michael Miller, who's involved in medical cannabis as a writer and a businessman and investor, so totally in the industry, but I actually spoke to him about being a medical cannabis patient. Michael told me about his story. He told me about how he got to a point where he tried cannabis actually for the first time at age 50, which is really interesting. But patient stories are about so much more than just what they smoke and when. Michael and I talked about everything from what he does as a cannabis patient when he travels outside of jurisdictions where it's legal, when he first told his kids that their dad uses marijuana, and in general about how this treatment changed his life.
Let's listen to the interview then.
Let's do it. Thanks for joining us, Michael. Really happy to be here with you today.
It's my pleasure, Alana. It's so great to be with you also.
So what I'd like for us to start with is tell us why cannabis? What's your story with this plant?
That's a great and very long story, but I'll try to make it as short as possible for you and your listeners. But the bottom line is, like everybody else in this industry, everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. Even most of the business people that I've met, there's a story behind it. It's not just about a rate of return. It's right. It's about doing something more than that. My story is I'm a simple mid-class kid from Cincinnati, Ohio, both parents from the Bronx. My father's first job was there. I grew up in a very conservative family, conservative religion, and cannabis was never part of my life. And being the firstborn son of a Jewish mother, I would never do anything to not make my mother proud. So I would not have even considered it, and never smoked a cigarette, never smoked a joint until I was 54 years old. Mm-hmm. So why? Why at 54 did I decide to do that? In 1990, I was practicing law in California, and having come from NYU Law School, I had the mindset of a New Yorker and put a foot into the street thinking that a car would stop in a crosswalk, and it didn't. And that changed my life. I was fortunate to, it was an SUV and not a small car, so it lifted me up, but I broke about a third of the bones in my body. I didn't know for 15 days whether I would walk again, and then it was about a year and a half process to get to there. That was followed up by a number of major issues also in vehicles. Stay away from me in vehicles, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Although my mother said things happen in threes. But after the last incident, which was only 5 years ago, when a millennial texter hit me and injured all of the earlier problems, and I had to undergo more spinal surgery, and I was in a neck brace, and a friend said, we need to get you off the pills, because I started taking pills, Alana, in 1990 of July, almost 25 years of opiate use. Not believing there was an alternative and not having one doctor my entire life saying, Michael, there's another way.
So what did your friend tell you that kind of changed everything for you?
Yeah, well, first I thought he was crazy, because he said, come over to the house, have a nice meal with the family, and I'm going to give you some weed. And I said, I don't smoke weed. Weed's for bad people. I would never do that. He said, first of all, it's not for bad people. It's actually used as a medicine and has been. But I said, I don't smoke. He said, well, you don't have to smoke now. And I couldn't figure out how I was going to get it into my body. I was that clueless. He said, just come over. So I did, because he was a friend. And he had a tincture, which he had actually made it himself in his kitchen. and he put this olive oil-based tincture under my tongue, and it wasn't good, it wasn't bad, it was a very herbal, a little bitter aftertaste from the olive oil, and he said, just tell me how you feel in about 45 minutes. Completely forgot, the time started to pass, and in about that amount of time, he said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm okay, why? And he said, well, you're crying. And I didn't even realize, and I felt my face, and he said, what's going on? I said, you're not going to believe it. I don't feel pain right now. And he said, I believe it. That's why I'm having you here. And I was overwhelmed. I literally started crying heavily because I couldn't believe that I was being introduced to my body for the first time in 25 years. And that put me on a mission. I flushed my pills. I felt the duty and obligation to help others like me and to pay it back like he helped me. I became an advocate, a lobbyist, a caregiver, and then business opportunities happened as a result, but that was only as a result of the suffering and the issues that I went through.
Mm-hmm. And so this was just from day to day, you were able to come off the opiates that you've been taking for 25 years, you said, and move on to a cannabis treatment?
Pretty shocking. A lot of doctors ask that. You were able to do that stone cold? And the answer is yes. I wasn't. In my mind, I was abusing because I was taking something I didn't really need to take to eliminate pain, but I wasn't abusing as far as quantity. So I had changed to different, you know, from Oxy to Percocet to Vicodin, you know, the whole panoply of the opiate pharmacopoeia. And I never experienced any type of withdrawal. Whenever a doctor says to me, well, there's no clinical evidence, I simply say, what about my evidence, right? I mean, in this industry, it's the only industry where the patient is driving the medicine instead of the doctors driving the medicine.
Yeah, well, it's the anecdotal evidence that comes into play.
That's right. And while that may not be able to sell a pharmaceutical product or get it across legal frameworks in Israel or certainly in my country with the FDA. I think we're at a point right now with all the history and the documentation and the anecdote of the relief of suffering with this miraculous plant that it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And the fact of clinicals at this point is almost what I feel is something that our governments can point a finger to.
Right. And I want to kind of go back to what you were telling us about starting the treatment. Did you continue on with cannabis tinctures? How did you modify your treatment along the way?
Yeah, that's a great question. And still to this day, I travel with them. I fortunately learned there's no airport in the world that can tell the difference between e-juice and cannabis oil. And I bring all my oils with me, and I have a sativa during the day that allows me to be creative and very focused, but it does not get me technically high or feel intoxicated. A little body buzz, but nothing. I'm the best me, I think, when I do that. I do two of those during the day, right when I wake up, and then early afternoon. Mm-hmm. One little eyedropper full. And then in the evening time, to help sleep, I'll take an indica tincture. Sometimes I'll take a couple puffs because I do enjoy smoking. Mm-hmm. But what they've developed now is a methodology where to keep you asleep, you take a capsule of an oil, which allows you to sleep. The initial puffs and the tincture will put you to sleep, but the key with sleep and a sound night of REM is staying asleep. Mm-hmm. So the vitamin E capsule will dissolve in your stomach 3 to 4 hours after you go to sleep. So let's say 2 to 3 in the morning, at some point the tincture is wearing off, the smoking is wearing off. Normally one would wake up and maybe start the head spin again and have to take another, but this way the pill has dissolved and now that's taking effect. So that keeps me asleep. Mm-hmm. And that's been extraordinary.
And this is all just a matter of your own process of trial and error, or are you working in conjunction with a doctor or a other sort of a practitioner?
Unfortunately, there's never been a doctor that has helped me in my life. And fortunately for people like Mara Gordon, who know 99% more than any medical doctor with respect to clinical and anecdotal and dealing with patients who are suffering, fortunately, I have people like Mara in my life.
Mm-hmm. So you've been able to consult with people who understand the specific products that are available to help you?
Yes, yeah, and I actually make my own medicine in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. I'm a sort of a holistic, organic guy, and the honest answer is, why should I pay $100 for this when I can make it for $3-4 in my kitchen? Mm-hmm. So there's a great machine called Magical Butter.
I've heard about it. Fantastic. I've been hearing a lot.
You can get them even in Israel. Yeah. Government, you didn't hear this, but buy it on Amazon. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's like a stew pot, and you simply push a button. You can put up to 4 ounces into a pot, and then you can mix either MCT oil or olive oil, and it's brainless. You can either make tinctures, oils, you can make butters, mm-hmm. Based upon using actual butter or ghee. Mm-hmm. And you can also put in shea butter, which will melt, and then you can make skin cream and topicals. Right. We actually did that. We got 25 pounds donated by growers, and we made about $200,000 worth of medicine, and we're going to give them out to veterans over the holidays.
Wow. So it's just dry flours and then whatever fat that you need to mix in.
Yeah, we have to what's called decarboxylate, mm-hmm. meaning you have to heat the plant, yeah. to turn the acids, the THCA, the CBDA, into, you know, THC that can be used by the body and has a psychoactive or medical effect. Yeah. So you heat that in the oven at 120 degrees for 20-25 minutes. You take it out like a turkey dinner, and then you take the decarboxylated flour and put that in the magical butter machine.
Amazing. I'm interested to
Come
hear
over
about...
sometime. We'll cook.
Yeah, sounds fun. I'm interested to hear about, you know, how this personal experience turned into a career, or really sounds like more like a mission for you.
It's coming sort of both. Mm-hmm. I have other things that I do. I formed with Dr. Sandra Carrillo, who's a speaker here also. We have a consultancy called Medicana, and we advise on both legal, financial, and medical matters. And that's been fantastic, and we're doing that in 5 countries now. I'm about to launch a very large investment fund in the space, and hopefully a lot of those checks will be written in your country, mm-hmm. because you have the greatest minds, the greatest technology when it comes to agricultural technology, and right. the wonderful work being done at Hebrew U and the Technion, with Rafi and Dr. Lemur and Didi. They're just extraordinary people, and all the people that work with them. So those are the business things. The interesting thing where I'm sort of mentally bifurcated. I have a creative side with my journalism, my writing, my podcast, but that allows me to meet, you know, interesting people like you and to learn more about each country I go to. But by nature, that also drives some business also.
Right. Well, it's nice how it all comes together.
It is, yes. It is really nice. But at the heart and soul of it, like the most important things that have happened to me in the last few days is numerous conversations that have brought tears to my eyes. You know, a father who has a 10-year-old son who has a malignant brain tumor from Bulgaria, where everything is illegal, and he travels to just learn from these doctors to self-medicate his child, mm-hmm. and to do something to prolong his life. You know, a mother who has a 7-year-old child with epilepsy. I mean, those are the things that really drive me. And like people used to say, was the conference a success? Did you? And my view from conferences was, well, if I met one person, Alana, if I got one business card that became an associate or a friend, that was worth it. But for me now, it's not about those cards. It's about hearing those personal stories. And part of the reason it was difficult telling my story. I don't really like talking about it, and I didn't tell my children for many years because I'm not a victim and I'm not whining or blaming anybody. But I've learned sometimes you need to have a story to help others, because then people will see that it's just Michael. It's not the conference host. It's not a speaker. I'm just a regular guy who has the same pains and owies like every other human being. And if some of my pain can help eliminate or prevent or limit another person's pain, especially a child or a mom or a dad, you know, that is what gets me through the day now. That's what drives me.
Yeah, it's about touching people and connecting with people, I guess. Right. How did your children take it when you eventually shared your story with them?
Well, you know, like most kids, they're like, come on, Dad, you're full of shit, right? And I've, you know, I'm in reasonably good shape now, and people would never think, and that's because I moved from lifting weights and running and biking to just yoga and swimming, mm-hmm. and I need to do that every day just for mental fitness, but I've maintained whatever the exterior looks like, so they just think I'm, you know, a healthy guy and who goes to work every day. So they didn't believe it for a while. Then they I'm not sure if they completely believe it. But the challenge was dealing with the actual taking of cannabis, right? How do you tell a kid who's learning every day that smoking kills, smoking is bad for you, that you smoke? How do you tell them when they go through the history books or that you're in a state that isn't legal? Fortunately, California is, but it's still... Only most people don't know this. Only 19% of the cities and counties in California allow legal weed. It's the power is in the local communities, so they can have another parent or an uncle or an aunt and go into a medicine cabinet and can be full of narcotics, just like Walgreens or a CVS, and that's okay because a doctor said it's okay, and he graduated medical school. But if they see somebody doing cannabis, the gut reaction is not they're doing that for medical reasons. They're doing that because they want to get stoned. And that's not my brand. That's not who I am. And, of course, I like to relax with a joint or a glass of scotch like anybody else. Mm-hmm. But that's not the message you want to give a child. So they're understanding it more now. And now my son, my daughter, I think I still embarrass because... daughters, she's 17. My son, I'm finally cool in my son's eyes because he can say to his teacher, you know, my dad's in the weed business. And just to watch the reaction, I think he likes to push buttons. It's funny.
It sounds like you've really given them something, you know, to talk about there.
That's for sure. Yeah.
So, Michael, what advice would you give to someone who is in a position like you were in kind of 20 years ago, using opiates to deal with pain and looking to find a better solution?
The first thing I would say is don't rely just upon people that graduated medical school. Most doctors, unless they're really out of the box and secure, will not make a suggestion that could risk losing their license. That's the key. There are a number of doctors in the United States that will take patients or who have left the so-called accepted medical community and are now advising. One of the most fantastic is Dr. Justin Sulek, who is in Maine and has his own line of products called Healer. He's one of the leading practitioners and clinicians. He's had about 20,000 patients. He's, I would say, you know, a male version of Mara. Extraordinary guy, but he also is well known for medical education programs for doctors, and he has extraordinary tools that are available online. You can just go to healer.com. So the first part is education. Educate yourself. You know your body better than I know your body, and better than your doctor knows your body. Understand what your symptoms are, understand what you're trying to do, and understand that what you're putting in your body has very bad effects, even though you think a lot of them are good effects. And you always want to start slow and at low dose. So the first step is accepting. The second step is realizing you're not doing something wrong if it is legal in your country. And in your country, you can get medical advice. You can go get a prescription. Don't worry about what other people are going to think. Care about yourself. Mm-hmm. Put yourself first. Life is short and we only have one.
Sounds like really good advice to end off on. Thanks so much for talking to me today, Michael.
It's my pleasure. I'm so thrilled we finally got together, and I really appreciate everything you're doing to help push the education and the message forward all across the world. Thank you, Ilana.
Thank you.
I'm Michael Schaefer Omerman. This episode was edited by myself, produced by Ilana Goldberg and Matan Whale, and our sound engineer was Yoav Morgard.